Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning.
Here's the pitch. A swing and a high fly ball.
This could be trouble. It's at the wall.
And it's a gunner!
He scores!
Now. Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Happy Sunday to you. I'm Mike Kelly. James O'Sullivan is our producer and board operator this morning. Welcome to Sports on a Sunday. We're with you today until 12 noon. Mike Claiborne will come your way about 1 o'clock. Nothing impossible with Michael Calhoun comes your way at high noon here on KMOX. Man, it was a gorgeous drive back from Columbia early this morning. What is it about the fall as you watch the sun rise in the morning? It's just such a gorgeous sight. A little crisp, a little chilly if you haven't been out today. We've got plenty to talk about over the course of the next 2 hours. Coming up in our next segment, Cam Jansen will join us. He's the host of the Blues Game Day podcast on KMOX.com. We'll talk about the Blues win. Barry Odom joins us. We'll also hear from Hall of Fame baseball writer Rick Hummel. In the 11 o'clock hour, my conversation with Konzo Martin. Stu Durando, who covers St. Louis U for the Post-Dispatch, will join us to talk Billiken basketball. Chris Raby had a chance to visit with John Mozeliak. You'll hear part of that conversation. And just in, Adam Wainwright spoke to Dan McLaughlin of Scoops with DannyMac.com. You'll hear part of that conversation coming up at about 11:45 this morning. By the way, if you want to hear the entire conversation, go to Scoops with DannyMac.com. Let's go to the headlines for you. For just the second time in seven games, the Blues picked up a win. They beat Toronto 4-1 the final. Robert Bortuzzo put St. Louis on the board.
Blues battle for the faceoff on the near side. Good stick check by David Perron. Now to Bortuzzo. He scores! The puck deflected in front was tipped, I believe. Braden Schenn might have had a piece of it. If not, Bortuzzo gets the goal, and the Blues take a 1-0 lead. 4:45 into the second period.
Later in the second, Zach Sanford added to the lead.
Blues win the draw, but the pass back to the line. Split the D, goes all the way down to Allen. He'll volley it ahead, connect to Sanford. Backhands it in. Anderson behind the net. Over on the far wing, put it into the corner. Perron comes away with it. Center score! Zach Sanford puts the Blues on top, 2-0. 6:55 to go, second period. What a goal by Sanford.
Later in the second, Ryan O'Reilly scored his first goal as a Blue.
Blues. Riley going to it. Off the skate of Tarasenko now. The penalty is coming to a close. Maroon gets to it along the wall. Finds Tarasenko to O'Reilly. He scores! O'Reilly! 3-0 Blues, 3:23 to play here in the second period, and Ryan O'Reilly with his first as a Blue. It'll be an even strength goal, and the Blues are up 3-0.
It was 3-1 in the third.
Straight away to Riley, minute 52 to go. Here's Toronto shooting it in front, pass blocked, looking to clear, and Barbashev, it's going to curl, goal! It bounced into the empty net, and Ivan Barbashev with a shorthanded goal puts the Blues on top 4-1. Minute 43 to go in the third period of play.
The Blues win it 4-1. They play in Winnipeg coming up on Monday. Colorado knocked off Carolina 3-1. Philadelphia 5, New Jersey 2, Buffalo 5, the Kings 1. It was Winnipeg 5, Arizona 3, Chicago 4, Columbus 1. Ottawa over Montreal 4-3 in OT. Also in overtime, Detroit 4, Florida 3. Another overtime game found Minnesota beating Tampa Bay 5-4. Nashville 3, Edmonton nothing. In overtime, Vancouver 2, Boston 1, Vegas 3, Anaheim 1. San Jose beat the Islanders by the score of 4-1. The 107th edition of Homecoming at Mizzou saw the Tigers snap a three-game skid with a 65-33 blowout victory over Memphis.
Proud for my kids. It wasn't pretty in a lot of areas, but the things that we did to execute early to get out to a fast start was one of the things we talked about all week on needing to do. And we got a three and out. We had an interception. We had a blocked punt, all big things. And then the offense played well throughout the course of the day, which really we anticipated a little bit that they may get some points, some yards. You know, we didn't play anywhere close enough defensively to win the way that we need to. So a lot of work, but also I'm happy to be able to correct that after a win.
That's Tigers head coach Barry Odom. His team led 21-0. Memphis closed, though, to 21-17 with just over 9 minutes left in the half. That's when four consecutive plays changed the game. Mizzou converted on a 4th-and-1. Then Drew Locke hit Albert Okwuegbunam on a 58-yard touchdown pass. Memphis then throws a pick. Locke, on the very next play, finds Jalen Knox for a 44-yard TD.
We talk about adversity. We've been through pretty much everything. To where we start out fast, they have a couple punches at us, but you know, we just stared right down the barrel. Just keep playing. You get the punches, just roll with the punches, and you got four quarters, so keep playing.
Locke finished 23 of 29, 350 yards and four touchdowns. 4-3, Mizzou will host 6-1 Kentucky next Saturday at 3 at Faurot. Elsewhere in college football, number 1 Alabama all over Tennessee, 58-21. Tua Tagovailoa, 306 yards passing, four touchdowns. The 8-0 Crimson Tide hold Tennessee to minus 22 yards of total offense. How about the Purdue Boilermakers? They upend number 2 Ohio State 49-20. DJ Knox runs for 3 scores. David Blough throws for 3 more. Third-ranked Clemson knocks off number 16 NC State 41-7. Number 5 LSU got 4 field goals from Cole Tracy. They beat number 22 Mississippi State 19-3. For just the third time in 11 meetings, 6th-ranked Michigan upends number 24 Michigan State 21-7. Number 9 Oklahoma 52, TCU 27. UCF has won 20 straight. The Knights ranked 10th this week, beat East Carolina 37-10. Number 25 Washington State over number 12 Oregon 34-20. Gardner Minshew, 323 yards passing and 4 touchdowns. Benny Snell Jr. runs for 169 in the go-ahead touchdown with 8:04 to play as 14th-ranked Kentucky beat Vanderbilt 14-7. Number 15, Washington over Colorado 27-13. 18th-ranked Penn State 33, Indiana 28. Number 19, Iowa over Maryland 23-love. In overtime, it was Temple 24, number 20, Cincinnati 17. Number 21, South Florida over UConn 38-30. And number 23, Wisconsin 49, the Fighting Illini 20. The Dodgers have earned a second straight berth in the World Series. They beat Milwaukee in Game 7. Homers by Bellinger and Puig power the Dodgers to a 5-1 win. The LA Lakers have started the LeBron James era with consecutive losses as they lose 124-115 to the Rockets last night. Elsewhere in the NBA, Jason Tatum, 24 points, 14 rebounds. The Celtics beat the Knicks 103-101. I'm Mike Kelly. Those are the headlines of the day. We're off and running on Sports on a Sunday on my favorite news radio, 1120 KMOX. Cam Jansen talks Blues hockey up next.
Welcome back to the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Still to come this hour on Sports on a Sunday, we'll talk to Hall of Fame baseball writer Rick Hummel. We'll also hear from Missouri football coach Barry Odom. By the way, a baseball note, David Bell's been hired as the new manager of the Cincinnati Reds. Blues win last night for just the second time in 7 games. Here to speak with us about the Blues, Cam Jansen, host of the Blues Game Day podcast on KMOX.com. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Well, doing well. First of all, just your thoughts on last night. Obviously, they finally, it appears, put everything together. Would you agree with that assessment?
Oh, sorry, I missed the game last night, so I don't know. No, I'm just joking. You kidding me, man? That's hockey night in Canada up there. No, they put it together, and they finally did. They finally put together a 60-minute game, which we've all been waiting for. And you can kind of go back to that Calgary game, maybe. I don't think they played a full 60 in that game as well. Different type of game. They shut them down in the neutral zone. And I know a couple times here and there you would see the two superstars show up a little bit, Austin Matthews, John Tavares. Didn't see much of John Tavares, but we shut those guys down. Did a great job keeping them to the outside, communication on D, cleaned up the passes. I mean, it was not necessarily a fun game to watch because it wasn't a track meet like we're kind of used to with the past couple games, but it was a tight-knit game, and our structure was there, and it showed. And again, you saw glimpses of Austin Matthews do his thing here and there, but not much. And that must have been pretty frustrating for them as well.
So why do you think it took, if you will, six games to put it together?
Because look at all the new guys. I mean, it's not – look, you could put the best players on a roster, and if they don't gel, then they don't gel. And you look back in the day when you see, like, some of these big tournaments in the Olympics and whatever, and you see a lineup, and you're like, oh, my God, these guys are – they're going to plow through everybody. But then they just couldn't click. You know, you got different chemistry going on. So that kind of stuff does happen, and we're finally kind of putting it together, see who fits with who, see who needs to sit, see this, see that. And other guys need to step their game up as well. So it's a lot of things combined. But, again, they brought it together on a big stage last night in Hockey Night in Canada, which is, like, the coolest thing in the world to play in front of. So, again, they did it, and that's the Blues hockey that we've been waiting for.
Okay, I'm going to ask you more about the Blues, but why is it the coolest environment to play?
Oh, gosh, man, that's what you do up in Canada. You watch Hockey Night in Canada. I mean, that is – I lived up there. I played juniors up there. They eat, breathe, and live hockey, and it's the coolest thing. And, you know, again, that's Canada for you. Everybody in that country is watching, and you know that. When you step on the ice in Toronto, it's just a different feel. And some people get jacked up for it. Some people get intimidated by it. But obviously last night they were jacked up.
Yeah, and just to add to your point, I ran into two gentlemen from Toronto at a hotel last night in Columbia, Missouri. Everyone else is focused on Ohio State and Purdue. They're watching the Nashville Predators.
That's what they do, and it's awesome. And it's just, that's Canada. It's great. I mean, everywhere you go, hockey is everything. And it's pretty cool. And you think we love baseball in this town. I mean, you get times that by 10 up there. There's really nothing else. And, again, I was glad I was able to experience that atmosphere playing up there in juniors in Windsor. And, again, I'll never forget those memories.
Cam Jansen with us here on Sports on a Sunday. Next segment, we visit with Missouri football coach Barry Odom. Ryan O'Reilly scores his first goal as a Blue. Does that get him going now a little bit?
Well, he was going. And he was. If he didn't put the puck in the net, he does so many other little things. You got to watch him. Just focus on him once in a while. Just isolate him on some of these shifts and just see what he does with the puck. He is so crafty and nifty, and he just breaks away from pressure, and he lays pucks. His puck placement is terrific. He's the kind of guy, like, I look at it like, wow, he makes everybody on that line better because of the plays he makes. And not even mention what he does in the defensive zone. You should have seen him blocking shots, sticks always in the right lanes. He just makes it so much easier for everybody else, not to mention he's got a great skill set to him, and he's got eyes in the back of his head, and he's a lot more aggressive than I thought. He's a lot more aggressive, and that goes a long way, too.
Cam, you've forgotten more about this sport than I'll ever know. So as you watch, and it's true, I mean, hockey season coincides with Mizzou basketball, and for the last 30 years I've done Mizzou basketball, so I don't get to see a lot of Blues games. Last night I was doing football, yesterday I'm doing football. So you played the sport. I never did. What is it that you noticed about this team that maybe isn't being talked about by those outside of, you know, the skill set that you have, that they should know about this team through the first seven games?
Well, on paper, we're extremely deep. And if you look at what we have, I mean, we have a great balance of different types of players on this team. You got big Patty Maroon, where you could put him up on the first line, or throw him on the second line, or even throw him on the fourth line. He could be productive. You got Ryan O'Reilly, who logs a ton of minutes, who could make plays, and you could put him with the superstar like Vladimir Tarasenko. But he also penalty kills and does little things in defensive zone. And the past couple games, I look at it like, ah, gosh almighty, because it's the mistakes were coming from veteran players. And we're not forced this year to play a Rob Thomas all the time and feed him 15 minutes, even if he's not playing that well, like we had to do last year because we weren't as deep. I mean, look, Dmitry Yashkin was playing on the second line for a long time last year. I mean, that's just unacceptable. But now you got so many guys you could intermix and things like that. So when we do finally start gelling together, this team, I am telling you, will be good. We will start gaining momentum because of the depth that we have and just the pieces that you could put together. I mean, you look at the two power plays, I can't tell which one's the first unit or the second unit because we're so deep. You know what I mean? It's just a great sign, and it's easy to be negative. But just looking at that roster, and once they start getting going, boy, oh, boy, they're going to be hard to stop.
In Cam Jansen's opinion, what makes Mike Yeo a good coach?
Oh, well, I think he's got to, I think he does have the locker room. I think he's an easy guy to talk to. If you watch him on the bench too, he'll walk by and you'll tap guys on the back, and he's always talking to somebody. He doesn't yell. He's not a big rah-rah yeller guy. Some coaches do that. Some coaches don't. I think he's more kind of chilled out. We'll sit you down and talk to you. So I think he's got a great relationship with the veterans, and that is huge to have, because you can lose that locker room, and we kind of saw it with Ken Hitchcock. And, hey, if you can crawl out of this kind of hole with this start and gather everybody together, get the leaders going, you're doing something right as a head coach.
Blues at Winnipeg on Monday. A thought on the Jets?
Oh, gosh. Man, they're big and tough, and that building sucks. It does. It's loud. It's everybody's on top of you. And it's just, it's a cool place to play. And it's not the, like, Toronto's cool, you know, it's a big city. But Winnipeg, ooh, I'm glad they're going now. Because when you go in there in February, which you're going to have to do anyway, it's kind of miserable up there. Hopefully no one's listening from Winnipeg. Sorry, guys. But it's not a lovely place to play in February. And that barn is loud, small, compact. The fans are right on you. And they got a couple big boys over there, like Dustin Byfuglien, who's 6'3", 260 pounds, and he'll knock you on your back. So he's scared to deal with. They got some firepower, and that building's difficult too.
Couple more questions for Cam Jansen. You host the Blues Game Day podcast on KMOX.com. For those that haven't heard that, what are some of the things you do each time?
Well, we break games down. And, you know, I'm pretty candid on a lot of different things, and I kind of spin in a lot of different directions because I try to watch these games, honestly. I think I'm more into hockey now than I probably ever have been, maybe since I was a kid, because when you play, it's just a different mindset, mm-hmm. I think. But overall, I look at the games. So I watch these games like a coach would. I'll TiVo and rewind them, break out. Like, everybody sees the goal. Everybody sees a nice, nifty pass for the goal. But how'd that play start? Well, Petro was in the corner. He makes a good little deke move, kicks the puck over for a nice little breakout pass, gets himself out of a jam. Little things like that I like to notice and pick up, and maybe somebody else does them. So I kind of present it that way in these podcasts, kind of show everybody a different side of things.
Hey, finally, what's been more annoying, the last 8 minutes with me or any time you spend with TJ Moe?
Oh, God, come on, dude. This is a walk in the park. This is a walk. Well, hey, combine TJ Moe and John Hadley together. Holy cow, talk about a headache. Now, we love those guys, man, and we go back and forth. And TJ, I tell you what, he knows his stuff, and he's trying to figure the hockey thing out, but he asks the right questions, and he will call me up and brainstorm for like 45 minutes about the Blues before he goes on his show. But I do the same thing with him with all the football stuff. So he knows his stuff, and we definitely go at it and love it.
Hey, Cam, thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Keep up the great work with the Blues Game Day podcast. Cam Jansen, the former Blues. All right, thank you. Cam Jansen, host of the Game Day podcast right here on KMOX.com. I'm Mike Kelly. Missouri picks up a win. They knock off Memphis. Barry Odom joins me next on KMOX.
Now, back to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Sports on a Sunday continues on KMOX. Missouri's football team snapped its three-game losing streak yesterday with a win over Memphis as the Tigers hammer Memphis on homecoming at Old Mizzou. Final score was 65-33. We're joined this morning by Tigers head coach Barry Odom. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having time for me to be on again this week.
Well, always great to have you on. What a game of runs. I mean, basketball season is still a couple of weeks away, but you score 21, they score 17, you score 20, and then you put the game away. But it was an interesting set of circumstances, wasn't it?
It was, and a lot of times, you know, you don't know how the game's going to lay out in front of you once it gets going, the flow of the game. But I thought, the challenge that I had for our team, and you know, they responded really well. Let's go out and let's get a fast start. Let's get, try to get some points on the board. Let's make a stop. Need to have an impact play somewhere in special teams, and all three of those happened. But then a little bit of felt like a state of relaxed, and they scored, field goal and scored again. And I felt like the momentum had switched completely on their side. And so we had the ball back. Got close on a third down conversion, and then Portland won. They call a timeout. We stuck with the call, and then really from there, offense took complete control of the game, and we didn't finish the game when we jumped back out and were in control offensively. I didn't think our defense responded. You know, it's when you're a really good team, if your offense is going down and scoring really every time and every possession they got the ball, you've got to do your part defensively to equal that and to get the game over.
Well, let's talk about that segment with 9:16 to play in the second quarter. They had cut the deficit from 21-0 to 21-17. You convert on the 4th-and-1. The next play, Alberto from Drew Lock for 58 yards. Memphis gets the ball back. They throw a pick, and on the very next play, Drew Lock hits Jalen Knox for a 44-yard touchdown pass, and like that, it's 34-17. Four consecutive plays, big plays, that really stretched out the lead and ultimately put the game away.
That was, and our playmakers, you know, they stepped up and were able to make plays. And there were a couple of one-on-one matches we had that we liked the opportunity. If we could continue to line up the way that we were getting the same look. And Drew did a nice job delivering the ball, you know, but to set that up. Adam Sparks did, you know, fundamentally was about as good as you can be on making the interception down on our sideline. And glad that he bounced back and played the way that he did yesterday. So Albert had a huge game. You know, still they continued at times. It was just a one-on-one matchup, and he ended up with great placement from Drew. He ended up making catches and runs after catch. Did a heck of a job.
Well, you had two 100-yard receivers in Albert Okwuegbunam. He had six receptions for 159 and three scores. Jalen Knox, 5 for 104 and a touchdown. Got to talk about Drew Lock's day because he bounced back after struggling in the previous three, 23 of 29, 350 and four touchdown passes.
I thought he was efficient. I thought he didn't, you know, there's one time, one of the best plays he had was rolling to our sideline, and it wasn't there. And instead of forcing it in a situation when we didn't need to, he threw the ball out of bounds. And, you know, the things he continues to make moves in the right direction. He was on it yesterday with his delivery, the calmness that he had in the pocket because the offensive line gave him time. But then also he was putting the ball on them on stride. And really, it was not a very good, you just look at weather conditions, it was not a very good day. It wasn't an easy day to throw the ball. And he overcame that, did a nice job on leading our offense and our football team.
And Larry Rountree with a big 58-yard touchdown run, 59-yard touchdown run. He had three touchdowns on the day, 9 carries, 118 yards on the day. There was a segment earlier in the game where he got caught from behind, and on that 59-yard run, he was not going to be caught from behind.
He did a nice job on running with great pad level. He finished all of his runs, and then he got in position on the one he scored on. Jalen Knox, who was really away from the play and then ended up getting back in the pitcher, and it wasn't a great block, but it was one that ended up probably springing him to get the last 20 yards, and he just kind of shielded the guy, and it was great effort by Jalen. Really good job blocking on the offensive line there to get him to the next level, and then Rountree did a nice job finding his way and getting it in there.
You're always looking for coaching points, and certainly there were several throughout the course of the game, but one big thing that sticks out, 12 penalties against your team for 122 yards, and in that comeback when they scored 17 unanswered points, penalties directly led to each of those scoring drives.
Yeah, that's really, really frustrating. And the things that the self-inflicted issues that we had with penalties, we haven't had anywhere close to that this
year.
So looking at the tape last night, you know, and then again this morning, those will be addressed. And that you can't give a team 120 yards, and that's what we did. So, and some of those are at such crucial times that will end up getting you beat. And we've you know, you can't stand for it.
Well, you've got a big one coming up this weekend as Kentucky will come to town after winning last night 14-7 in a close win against Vanderbilt. Just a thought on Mark Stoops' team.
Well, he's had time to build it into what they are today. And, you know, they're 6-1 and they'll be highly ranked. They've won every close game. You know, you feel like all of them are close. They've won them. And they're going to play sound. They'll be very aggressive. They'll run the ball. And then defensively, they're at the tops in just about every category in our conference on the way that they play. So, great challenge for us, but man, oh man, what a great opportunity.
Yeah, great opportunity at home, and you get to see a terrific running back in Benny Snell Jr., don't you?
Yeah, he is. He's solid, and you look across the country on great backs, and we've already faced some, but he's right up there in the conversation, if not the best one.
Yeah, I've got to ask you, you know, here we are a week out and you still have plenty of time for this to unfold, but just a thought on Nate Brown and possibly Emmanuel Hall. Could they be back?
Yeah, I think we'll get Nate back. I really do. The way that he was running at the end of the week, he's getting so close. And then Emmanuel is going to be back in town today from his father's funeral, and we'll kind of assess that when he gets back.
Little thought on your team right now. Seven games in, you like the way they approached this week. You said that on multiple times throughout the course of the week prior to the game against Memphis. Do you kind of feel like they're taking strides in the right direction as you move into the second half of the season?
Yeah, absolutely. And they approached last week, and it's going to be the same thing this week. Is we've got to find a way to go 1-0 this week. And if you're looking behind or what is taking place the first 7 weeks of the season, then you're not moving yourself forward, and you can't look too far forward. So you got to be in the present, in the here and the now, and let's find a way to play our best ball on Saturday.
Thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it. Congratulations on the win.
Thanks, Mike. See you soon.
All right, take care. That is Tigers head coach Barry Odom. His team knocks off Memphis. They host Kentucky coming up next Saturday at Faurot Field in Columbia. When we return on Sports on a Sunday, Hall of Fame baseball writer Rick Hummel will talk Cardinals and World Series up next on my favorite, News Radio 1120 KMOX.
Welcome back to the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
The Blues won last night. We'll hear from Zach Sanford and Mike Gill coming up a little bit later here on Sports on a Sunday. Next hour, Konzo Martin, Stu Durando, John Mozeliak, and Dan McLaughlin spoke with Adam Wainwright. You'll hear part of that conversation coming up in hour number two of Sports on a Sunday. He is a Hall of Fame baseball writer with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and he joins us here on KMOX. Good morning, Rick Hummel.
How are you, sir? Not a long time.
It has been a long time. It is always great to speak with you. Before we talk Cardinals, you know, I also want to kind of get some thoughts from you on the World Series matchup between the Dodgers and the Red Sox. Kind of breaking news today, the Reds have hired David Bell to be their next manager. Just a thought.
That's a good call. I mean, he's in the Red system. His dad played there for a number of years. Actually, his grandfather, Gus. And then Buddy has had some history with there. And, you know, he managed a little bit in the minor leagues with the Reds. So that's a good call. He went to the Giants as a player development director for a year, and that probably gave him a pretty good feel of something besides just being on the field. And now he's back on the field. That's a good deal. I mean, I like Riegelman a lot, too. But David Bell, I think, has the patience to do a job like that for a team that's still emerging. They have a ways to go, especially in that division.
What do you think the chances are that the Cardinals can actually keep Stubby Clapp in their system?
I would think Toronto would have a lot of interest in him, mm-hmm. especially since the outgoing manager always endorsed him, John Gibbons. He's coached for the Canadian national team. He is Canadian. He's played for the Canadian national team. He's had more success than anybody could possibly imagine anybody would have in his first 2 years at the AAA level with the Cardinals to get two championships out of that, including one AAA championship and one PCL title, the second one, actually, had two PCL titles. So I think that's the place he would go. I don't know how he ranks with other people, but I think he's got to be the top candidate there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would think so, too. So let's talk Cardinals. John Mozeliak had a conversation with folks earlier this week. We're gonna hear from Mo next hour with Chris Raby in an interview that Chris had with John, I think, on Thursday or Friday. As you look at the Cardinals, in Rick Hummel's mind, and I know you've written this, but in your mind, what are the rank or prioritize what this team needs to do during this offseason?
They have to have a star hitter, as they needed last season when they tried to get Stanton. Last offseason, I should say. Tried to get Stanton. Got Ozuna, who was considered a star hitter. He was a good hitter this year. He knocked in 88, mm-hmm. hit 280-something, hit 23 home runs. But with his shoulder compromising him, he wasn't the star hitter they envisioned. They still have to have that star hitter. Somebody who, when he comes up, the other team says, what do we do with this guy? You don't see teams trying to, other than when Carpenter was really hot, trying to intentionally walk a lot of Cardinal hitters. You know, they walk Carpenter willy-nilly there for a while when nobody can get him out. But, I mean, for the course of a whole season, you need that one guy. They have too many guys that bat down the lower half of the lineup. They need more guys to hit the upper half.
What about from a pitching perspective?
Pitching, they got to have left-handed bullpen for sure. They have nobody you can rely on there. They need to figure out who the closer is. Now, from a left-handed relief standpoint, a guy like Zach Britton, for instance, who pitched with the Yankees after being with Baltimore a long time, is a left-handed reliever who was also a closer. He was not a closer with the Yankees because they had Chapman, but he's been a closer for many, many years otherwise. He might kill two birds with one stone as a free agent, but they have to have a left-handed reliever, probably two, to get top left-handed hitters out. They haven't had that for a really, really long time, maybe since Segrist was here. Mm-hmm. They had those good years in the, 4 or 5 years ago we're talking now. And then they've probably got to get a third baseman. This hitter, by the way, ideally is a left-hander that they bring in, because all you have is Carpenter right now. For the people who want to ship him away, first of all, you have no left-handed hitting if you do that, and second, you have no leadoff guy. So he's playing somewhere next year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. What do you make of the Ankiel fascination, I guess, if you will?
I guess I'm kind of fascinated. For a team that needs left-handed relief, I wouldn't be surprised if they brought him to camp. He lives there. Mm-hmm. No real expense for them. And if he's serious about it and can get people out, throwing strikes, you talk about guys who need to throw strikes, but he really needs to throw strikes given his history. He can't be throwing them out the backstop anymore. So I'm intrigued by that. He will certainly be a short relief guy because he's 39 years old and hasn't pitched in 15 years, basically. So I can see, left-handed relievers, if they're breathing, they always have a chance.
Next hour, we're going to hear part of a conversation that Dan McLaughlin had for our Scoops with DannyMac.com with Adam Wainwright. Just a thought on Adam and what you anticipate from him next season and what, in all probability, will be his final one in St. Louis.
Well, I'm more encouraged now than I was a year ago at this time when he didn't make it to the finish line. He had to have, they had to shut him down with his elbow problems, and he had surgery in the late season, in the early off season, and there was no guarantee of what you were going to get the next spring, as there is not now, but a guarantee. But I like the way he threw the last six starts.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen him throw that way in 4 or 5 years, where he also didn't hurt afterward, where he couldn't pitch comfortably for a while after that. So I think he's in the rotation, and if he's not, he's, the way they use starters as relievers now, he could easily slide into the bullpen and pitch. I mean, Josh Hader pitched 3 innings last night. Wainwright could pitch 3 innings, 4 innings, whatever it took. But I think he's in the rotation now until they find that the young guys, some of the young guys are more ready than they were last year, or that they've acquired somebody, maybe a left-handed starter out of the free agent pool. I like him. I think he's going to be a big help to them. I wouldn't even think that next year is his last season necessarily.
Finally, Red Sox or Dodgers? Who do you like and why?
The Red Sox have been the best team all year, 115 wins. The only question I have about them is Kimbrel has not been pitching very well. He even lurched to the finish line the other night to get that save. So the Dodgers bullpen, while people talked about the Milwaukee bullpen being so deep and so forth, the Dodgers bullpen was actually better in this last series than the Brewers bullpen was. Jeffers was awful for the Brewers, their closer. So I like the Red Sox if Kimbrel is all right. If he's not all right, if he has troubles, the Dodgers will win it.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, take care. That is Rick Hummel, the Hall of Fame baseball writer from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I'm Mike Kelly. The St. Louis Blues pick up a win, 4-1 the final. Here's Mike Yeo after.
Yeah, that was that looked a lot more like the St. Louis Blues tonight. I thought the guys came out and gave us a great response. They gave great response to, as far as the way last game went down and the way that we sort of talked about we need to play the game. We did it to a T.
You said you kept one of the reasons you kept Barbashev in the lineup was his penalty kill. Obviously, he made you look pretty smart.
That's what he's been doing. He's been playing well, whether he scored the goal or not. He's been carving out a niche for himself. He's been carving out a role for himself. He's taking pride in it. And he's doing a really good job. And so obviously we knew that was going to be a big factor in the game tonight. How dangerous their power play is, especially in that 6-on-4, he was outstanding. But I thought all game long he was real strong.
How much of a focus was playing physically against this Maple Leafs team to make sure you kept them to the outside?
Well, I think it's going to be a focus for us on every team. And to be honest with you, we spent less time pre-scouting the Maple Leafs probably than we have been other teams. So we've got to shore up our game and get consistent with our game first. Tonight was a good example of that. Regardless of who we're playing, we have a way that we have to play the game. And if you do that for 60 minutes, I think you're going to like a lot of what you see.
Sanford said he could have played better, but after everything he's been through,
yeah,
get that goal.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. Very happy for him. He's a smart player, and I thought O'Reilly was outstanding tonight, in all areas of the game. So that line gave us some really good minutes.
And Jake's played tonight.
Jake was phenomenal. Very, very calm, very confident in the net. We needed a win here tonight, and Jake gave us every opportunity and obviously delivered.
And Bartuzzo, put him back in the lineup and also moved him up pairing, I guess.
We believe that we have guys that we can spread things out a little bit. When we looked at that D pairing, we thought that could be real big physical, defensive-minded, hard to play against, kind of a shutdown D pairing. And certainly they delivered. They were hard to play against, I thought.
One game obviously doesn't make a season, but why do you think it clicked for you guys tonight?
Well, I don't know. To give you an answer on that, but what we have to do is we have to learn from it. At this point of the season, what we're trying to do is you're trying to build your game and you're trying to learn. And I think that as uncomfortable as it was and difficult as it was, that Montreal game, we learned from it. And now we have to learn from this one, that if we can commit to playing that way night after night, then we're going to be a hard team to play against.
Mike, what'd you see in Sanford the other game that maybe you keep being good in that spot?
Smart player. Obviously, when you're going out with a guy like O'Reilly, you know that you're going to need a guy that you can trust on the defensive side of things. He's going to be playing against top lines, and you're going to have to be able to count on him. And we've talked a lot about it in the last couple of days. Obviously, every player, you grow up, your focus is on scoring goals, but there's a lot more to the game than just scoring goals. There's every time you step on the ice, you're faced with something different. Could be a D-zone shift, a neutral zone shift. Whatever the case is, you got to be ready to do your job. And I think he takes pride in doing those things very well. And so to get the goal, I don't want to say it's a bonus, because certainly when you're playing with offensive guys, we're trying to accomplish that. But he played the game the right way.
Even up 3-0, could you ever feel comfortable against these guys?
I think that there is obviously you have to have desperation. You have to be aware of how skilled they are and how dangerous they are. Tonight there was a good mood on the bench, and what happens is you build confidence through the course of the game. The way that we were playing the game, you could tell that our players were more poised. They were able to execute better. We were able to continue to get to the offensive zone. We were still in the right position, but the players felt like they deserved to win. And so even though they scored the goal, that didn't unnerve us. That didn't change our game. I think that the guys responded really well to it.
Only the second time in 7 games the guys have scored first. Did that give a little boost to them?
Yeah, there's no doubt that that helps. But again, regardless whether we got the first goal or not, there seemed to be a different focus, a different commitment to shift after shift, going out and playing the right way.
Mike Yeo, after the Blues win in Toronto last night, 4-1 was the final score. It was 1-0 when Zach Sanford added to the St. Louis lead, and afterwards met with the media.
Okay, Alex, thank you very much. Joining us down here in the St. Louis dressing room is Zach Sanford. Zach, congratulations on the goal and the victory. The goal proves to be the game-winning goal, and how nice was it to have that puck go in for you?
Yeah, thanks, guys. Obviously, it's always nice to score in this league and any other league for that. And the guys were all happy for me, and it was a good win by us. We did what we wanted to do, and I got back on track in the W column.
Zach, Joey here. Hey, just talk a little bit about what this goal means to you. It's not just an ordinary goal. I mean, you know, we talked about a little bit a couple games ago, but you losing your father in the preseason, and here we are tonight, your second opportunity with the Blues this year, and you come up with a huge goal there in the second. What did that mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome, obviously. It's every kid's dream to, you know, get here, and it was his dream for me too, and you know, he's been through there with me every step of the way, and he'll continue to stay with me, and you know, hopefully I can continue to make him proud.
Well, there's no doubt that you will, bud. Zach, you guys took a 3-0 lead into the third period. What were some of the things, if anything, that was talked about to keep the focus in the third as strong as it was through the first two?
You know, we were just talking about playing the same way we had been. I think, you know, tonight was the first game in a handful that we've, you know, played the way that we want to play, and, you know, hard on pucks, hard on the forecheck, and, you know, we were doing all the right things tonight through there, and we just continued to stay on top of that, and, you know, it worked out well for us.
Zach, what was the biggest mindset difference when you look at the Montreal game a couple days ago to tonight when you came into Toronto?
You know, I think today was kind of, you know, we took it as do or die, and we had a kind of a slide there, and, you know, today was that game that, you know, we have to win this one, and, you know, I think every guy in there came out and put in the work to do that.
That is Zach Sanford afterwards. Blues play in Winnipeg coming up on Monday. I'm Mike Kelly. This is Sports on a Sunday, heard each Sunday morning in this time slot on KMOX. Coming up next hour, Konzo Martin, Stu Durando, John Mozeliak with Chris Raby, and Dan McLaughlin with Adam Wainwright on Sports on a Sunday on KMOX. The news is coming up next after this break.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.